Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, February 20th, 2018. A peace expert says power sharing is a problem in South Sudan.
The mediation doesn't get to decide what the content of any agreement might be. And so, despite reservations, hesitations, all of the things we knew that had led to the conflict in 2013, a power-sharing agreement was introduced. Does it make sense to go back to a very, very similar formulation?
And the steering committee of the National Dialogue adds its voices to the growing call to ask President Kiir to pardon James Gadet.
When it is confirmed, this sentence, then all you can do is to ask the president to grant clemency to James Gadet as a way of reconciliation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A new proposal for power-sharing government was tabled at the High-Level Revitalization Forum peace talks for South Sudan. The collapsed 2015 peace deal also contained a formula for a power-sharing arrangement that failed. Ali Vaji is a visiting fellow at the United States Institute of Peace. He says not enough has been done to ensure the latest proposal will overcome the governance challenges facing South Sudan.
Well, the mediation in Addis Ababa has recently tabled a new proposal for how governance should be arranged in South Sudan. And at the heart of that proposal is power sharing. Power sharing was at the heart of the 2015 peace agreement. It didn't really succeed, and so it's worth looking at why it didn't succeed and whether it's appropriate now.
And when you look at conflict, for instance, the Kenya 2007 post-election violence, there was a power sharing between Kibaki
yes.
and Raila.
Yes.
And in Zimbabwe, there were a couple of power sharing arrangements between former President Robert Mugabe and late opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai. Why is power sharing such a big deal when there's conflict?
Well, power sharing, there's nothing inherently wrong with it. I think that's the first point to make. And it is commonly used. But as you pointed out, it doesn't always succeed when essentially the ambitions of the principles remain undiminished. And both of the examples you mentioned, we can see that that did not resolve the underlying problems between the individuals concerned, but also the reasons that led to the conflict between them to begin with. In the case of South Sudan, it's even more complicated than a Zimbabwe or Kenya situation because you have a civil war that has been now ongoing for several years. And so power sharing doesn't necessarily address the fundamental causes of why there is a conflict.
And your report is quite interesting. You are writing from an experience. You are someone who has met both President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. Do you think these two leaders can sit on the same table and look at each other and continue to work for peace in South Sudan?
Well, the point I would make, John, is that power sharing was a demand of the parties in the 2013, 14, 15 peace talks. And the mediation doesn't get to decide entirely what the content of any agreement might be. And so, despite reservations, hesitations, all of the things we knew that had led to the conflict in 2013, a power sharing agreement was introduced. Now we can see that after the 2015 agreement, after the collapse in July 2016, does it make sense to go back to a very, very similar formulation? It doesn't mean that both leaders can't necessarily find it within themselves to put the best interests of the country forward. I don't think that they are unpatriotic in that sense. But clearly, there are serious difficulties that arise in kind of considering any similar arrangement. And given that, the mediation has an obligation to consider what has been done before and learn from that experience rather than repeat it.
And what is an alternative? What do you think should be one of the best formulas for South Sudan's case? It looks like it's unique. Two people who have been in the liberation struggle together are now not seeing each other eye to eye just because of power.
We have to ask ourselves, why is the presidency so important? Why is the palace sitting in J1 so important? If we're really serious about decentralization, both of power and responsibility and resources, then the center needs to be de-emphasized. And that means that the struggle for sitting in the presidency or in the vice presidency or in the Council of Ministers has to be less important than it currently is. That is part of the answer, I think, that if there is a more technocratic approach, a more separated list of powers between the different branches of government, that can help. But also, the transitional government is supposed to be transitional. It is supposed to allow the country to exit the crisis and not endure in the crisis indefinitely. And so for the duration of that transition period, it should have special arrangements that aren't necessarily the ones that will continue indefinitely. We have to look first at not the positions, but what allows an exit to that crisis. And if that means a more decentralized, a more limited set of powers, a more constrained set of powers in the executive, that might be necessary.
And just a final question here. The people in South Sudan, sort of like polarized along ethnic lines. And there's this issue of our man, our son,
yes,
at the top.
Yes.
How would you strike a deal in a society like that, where everybody supports their village mate, if you like?
Well, I would question whether that's entirely the case for everybody. As we know, millions of people have fled their homes and now, I think, are more interested in the basics of life. And certainly, it doesn't mean that they're renouncing their affinity to their kin, to their ethnic group, but certainly there are other important things that you can have, whether you are a Dinka or a Nuer or a Bari or anything else. Everybody needs water, everybody needs food, everybody needs shelter, everybody needs education. Those are the priorities of the transitional government and security. And I think the question should be, rather than seeing or saying, this is the person who should be there because they're from my community, the question should be, who can deliver those basic goods, basic essentials?
That's Ali Vergi, a visiting fellow at the United States Institute of Peace here in Washington. He was speaking with me in one of our studios an hour ago. An official of the National Dialogue Steering Committee has joined a chorus of voices calling on President Salva Kiir to pardon Riek Machar's former spokesman, James Gadet Dak. The High Court in Juba sentenced Gadet to 21 years in prison and death by hanging last week after he was found guilty of treason and insulting President Kiir. Gift Friday reports for VOA from Juba.
Alfred Taban, who heads the information team at the National Dialogue Steering Committee, says despite the High Court's decision to sentence Gadet to death by hanging, the National Dialogue's leadership will ask President Kiir to grant James Gadet Dak amnesty. Taban says the steering committee of the National Dialogue would like to confirm the court's verdict on Gadet.
What the National Dialogue can do is, when it has confirmed this sentence, then all it can do is to ask the president to grant clemency to James Gadet as a way of reconciliation. So I'm sure the leadership of the National Dialogue is going to ask the president to grant amnesty to James Gadet, even if he has been sentenced to death. And I'm almost sure he will be released after that amnesty is granted.
Taban says the steering committee is not interfering with the work of South Sudan's judiciary, but will continue trying to reconcile South Sudanese communities torn apart by the conflict.
What the National Dialogue has achieved so far is great. I mean, the release of political detainees. I cannot give you a specific figure, but I know that in Juba alone, 33 political detainees have been released. And in the whole country, we are talking about almost 90 political detainees have been released. This is a big achievement, which could not have been accomplished without the National Dialogue.
Taban says the National Dialogue's Security Steering Committee is trying to secure the release of prisoners of war and political detainees still in detention across South Sudan. John Dow is a resident of Juba. He says executing Gadet violates the succession of hostilities agreement signed in December and would negatively affect efforts to end the conflict.
Hanging of Gadet, it will derail the reconciliation process and sell claim National Dialogue. First of all, it will derail it because people are working to bring all South Sudanese together, and this one turned out to be the most ugly and will have a very, very unwanted complication in the political discourse of this country.
Another Juba resident, Malek Guy, says executing Gadet will fuel more conflict in South Sudan.
It will create a permanent conflict within South Sudanese residents, because it may seem to be simple currently, but the revenge later on will not be okay. If they say there will be a peace that need to be brought back in the country, all political detainees and prisoners of war need to be released.
Guy says all eyes are on President Kiir to see if he will grant Gadet a pardon.
If he can revoke that, that means President is really committed to bring back peace in the country. Because what we need is we need to forget about the past and we think of the present, how people will live in the country.
Last week, Amnesty International joined local and international rights groups called on President Kiir to overrule Gadet's death penalty and set him free. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
Still on matters to do with South Sudan, more religious leaders are calling on President Salva Kiir to end the conflict in the country. Reverend Kenon Clement Janda says South Sudan needs a new leader to end the ongoing conflict. Janda wrote a letter to President Kiir asking the president to step down and follow the examples of former South African President Jacob Zuma and the Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn, who both resigned last week.
For the reasons I have put down, the country is gone, and there's no way. I don't expect any miracles now to bring the country back to peace and prosperity. So I'm begging him really to listen to his conscience and calm down. Right now, all that there is in him is only decrease of appointment and dismissal. Nothing else. There is no other program of government. There are no developments. There is no peace. There is war. So what else could one do?
Can't you advise him to change his ways of administering the country? Calling him to step down is quite strong.
Yeah, it has to be. It is not possible. He has managed to play around with people, but he still control the system, so nothing happened. So the best thing is for him to give power to somebody else. That's right.
There is an attempt by the IGAD countries to bring an end to the fighting in the country, and you are calling for the president to step aside. Are you not adding fuel to fire?
Well, you know that the second session of IGAD failed to reach an agreement, and precisely because of the issue of governance. And I'm addressing the issue of governance at this point.
You've handled difficult situations during your career in the church as a minister in the church. And the church has been in the forefront calling for an end to this violence. If you're given an opportunity to fix things in South Sudan, how would you go about it, Reverend?
First of all, I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about the country. So let's not misunderstand that I'm looking for a job of governing the country. I am simply saying the truth. The whole truth and nothing but the truth. The country needs a new leader to bring it to sanity. There's no playing around with words at this point. And I'm not talking about me, I'm talking about the country. And I'm sure that there are out of the 8 or 12 million South Sudanese, there are capable people who can bring the country to sanity, and I appeal to President Salva Kiir to listen to his conscience, his deep conscience, and literally hand power to somebody else.
You've been President Kiir's advisor on diplomatic issues. Since you left the country, have you spoken to him? I mean, your letter is addressed to him. I know that he will receive it, but have you spoken to him on phone or any other means?
I have not talked to people. I just have been quiet. And you heard me reflect last May, when I was asked to be on the and National Dialogue Committee, and I said, oh, that was not a dialogue. It was a monologue. That's all I said. And I think time will prove that what I said then is true. Because they're just talking to themselves, and they've never made a dent, as far as I'm concerned, and the dialogue. So I have not talked, I've not spoken to President Salva since I came out.
All right, Reverend Kenyon Clement Janda, thank you very much for speaking with us at the Voice of America.
Thank you, John, and thank you for the good work for the country. I still pray that Mr. President Salva Kiir would listen to conscience and not allow himself to be advised by wrong people who want him to continue playing around with the country.
That's Reverend Kenyon Clement Janda, former advisor of President Kiir on diplomatic affairs. He was speaking to me from northern Uganda this past hour. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at child mortality around the world. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what important life-saving technique do you know?
I was once a member of Red Cross, so I was trained to give first aid, for example, to a baby who is choking, you get? Then to give first aid to someone who has had a fractured dislocation. Yeah, that's all.
Self-defense. It is a life-saving technique because the city where we are now has lots of thugs everywhere, and if you have that self-defense, it really, at least they may take what they want from you, but it saves your life.
When someone has drawn into a water, let me say, who was swimming, you pull him or her up from the water, and then you pump the water out, and you give him oxygen with a kiss of life.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today, we are talking about countries with the highest newborn mortality rates. The UN Children's Fund reports in newborn babies in some of the poorest, most dangerous countries in the world are up to 50 times more likely to die than newborns in the world's richest, safest countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA in Geneva.
A survey of 195 countries finds a shocking disparity in the mortality rates of newborn babies in poor and rich countries, and most of those deaths are preventable. On average, it reports 27 deaths out of 1,000 births in poor countries, compared to 3 deaths out of 1,000 in rich countries. While Pakistan is the lowest-ranked country, the survey notes 8 of the 10 most dangerous places to be born are in sub-Saharan Africa. Japan tops the rankings with only 1 newborn death out of 1,111. The UN Children's Fund reports great progress has been made in cutting by half the number of deaths among children under age 5. When it comes to newborns, though, UNICEF official Meg French says the results are deplorable.
There are 2.6 million babies who die every year in their first month of life, and that is equivalent to 7,000 babies every day. And those babies need our attention. It's a tragedy because most of those deaths are preventable.
She says more than 80% of newborn deaths are due to prematurity, complications during births, or infections such as pneumonia and sepsis. This month, UNICEF is launching a global campaign called Every Child Alive, which aims to reduce deaths among newborn babies. French, who heads the campaign, tells VOA there are simple, affordable measures even the poorest countries can take to bring down this unacceptably high death toll.
We know that one of the things that would help babies the most is to be born into a safe pair of hands, so a trained midwife, doctor, or nurse. Initially, you don't need big, fancy hospitals. If you can get trained health workers that can get out into communities, that's a really important first step.
French says other proven solutions that can prevent newborn deaths include access to clean water, disinfectants, breastfeeding within the first hour of birth, skin-to-skin contact, and good nutrition. UNICEF is appealing to governments to invest in improving fragile health care systems. It says providing facilities for mothers and newborns with water, soap, and electricity will go a long way toward saving lives. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Officials in Jonglei State are calling on their sons and daughters who live in the diaspora to return home and help rebuild their communities. Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguer says support from South Sudanese in the diaspora can help his state tackle the current economic crisis. Manyang David Mayar has the story for VOA from Bor.
Speaking at an occasion of the opening of a 40-story building belonging to a young man from the diaspora over the weekend, Governor Aguer challenged more young South Sudanese, men and women living abroad, to come back home and help develop Jonglei State.
Those who have the heart to come and support their nation in the form of supporting building a complex like what Panthum have done and his brothers is a pride for all of us who had been in the SPLA-SPLM, and we should encourage them to come back home and support us in building our state, building our nation.
Mayor of Bor Municipality, Guy McCool, reiterated Aguer's call on the South Sudanese diaspora to spearhead investment, adding that he will provide land to any youth who would like to establish businesses in the state.
You are welcome. You can get a space. People complain a lot that we don't get a land for structures. So today, as a new mayor of Bor, if you are ready like Panthum, I can manage to get you an allotment.
Makur's appointment was criticized by many youth who hail from Jonglei and are living in the diaspora, arguing he has little education and does not know how to develop the municipality.
Most people talk in Facebook criticizing those who are here, like me, myself. They criticize me. The mayor is not qualified. This is what I tell them, please. To recognize you, it is to make something that seems like what has been done by Pansu. This is what I want to say than talking in Facebook, and you did not put in that to be seen physically.
Panthum Cholriak migrated to Australia in 2002 as a refugee. He returned back to Jonglei and built the 40-story building with money in hand as a logistics specialist in Australia. Riak says, although the conflict continues in South Sudan, he is not afraid to invest his savings.
I cannot avoid to come and build in my home and say there is something will happen. I have to come and do something good. You do something in abroad, nobody will know. But you come and do something in your area, I think that's a great job you can do.
Panthum has named the building after his father, Cholriak, who was one of the SPLA commanders killed during the war. Late last year, Governor Aguer established a diaspora coordination office to work with members of the diaspora who want to establish development projects in their communities.
The diaspora have been helping their boomers, their payaman. They have sent thousands of dollars. We don't have records of those. This is what I wanted. I want those support to be recorded. They are not recorded, unfortunately, because the best thing that you can do is to have a record.
Aguer says he has received invitations from the sons and daughters of Jonglei State living in Australia and the United States. The governor says he will use the opportunity to encourage young men and women in the diaspora to contribute to nation building. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. An official of the National Dialogue Steering Committee has joined the Voices calling on President Kiir to grant Riek Machar's former spokesman, James Gadet, amnesty. The High Court in Juba recently sentenced Gadet to 21 years in prison and death by hanging after he was found guilty of treason and insulting the president. Alfred Taban, the head of information at the National Dialogue Steering Committee, says despite the High Court's decision to sentence Gadet to death, the National Dialogue's leadership will ask President Kiir to grant him amnesty. Taban says the Steering Committee will not stop the work of South Sudan's judiciary, but will continue to try to reconcile South Sudanese communities torn apart by the conflict. And finally, the UN Children's Fund reports newborn babies in some of the poorest, most dangerous countries in the world, including South Sudan, are up to 50 times more likely to die than are newborns in some of the world's richest, safest countries. A survey of 195 countries finds a shocking disparity in the mortality rates of newborn babies in poor and rich countries, and most of those deaths are said to be preventable. On average, it reports 27 deaths out of 1,000 births in poor countries, compared to 3 deaths out of 1,000 in rich countries. While Pakistan is the lowest-ranked country, the survey notes 8 of the 10 most dangerous places to be born are in sub-Saharan Africa. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song One Love by Atum Pan.
All I need is your love, oh baby. So baby, don't dodge, just give me that, oh baby. All I ever need is your heart, oh. So give me that, oh girl, let me back, oh. Cause that is all I need. Oh, be don't want, don't leave me. Oh, be pray, want, don't leave me. Oh, be don't want, don't leave me. Oh, be pray, want, don't leave me. Girl, I love you not because of your bumper. Girl, I love you not because of your tonga. Girl, I like you for who you are. Not for your shape looking like guitar. Not for the sake of your shape guitar. Oh, hey. Girl, play em, girl, play em. Tinini, tonono, tinini. Give me melody, give me melody. Your melody, your fabo, baby. Charlie. Love will no be naira or dollar. Oga, it no dey matter whether you be short or tall. Obi don't want me, don't leave me. Obi pay what penny, penny be. Obi don't want me, don't leave me. Obi pay what penny, penny be. All we need is one love, oh baby. For the world to be a better place, oh baby. All we need is one heart. You know, go feel say you dey love God, oh. If you know they love your brother, so me tell you this. If you love him, make you show it, show it. You ever try to stop it, control it, control it. Baby girl, make you roll it, roll it. It's a beautiful thing, so hold it, hold it. Somebody need ya, somebody want ya. Somebody somewhere really care about ya. Baby, what you say? I truly tell you no. Obi don't want to need me. Don't leave me. Love is all we need. Obi pray what can you be. Penny be. One love is all we need. Obi pray what can you be. Don't leave me.
We have been listening to Ghanaian musician Atum Pan with the song One Love. John Tanza in Washington, thanks for being here. Would like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you join us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.